911, what are you recording?
Hi, there's a person who's been stalking me online, and they just showed up to my house.
Okay, and they're outside now?
Yes, they're knocking on my door.
Okay. And do you know if they have any weapons?
They have a bunch of camera people, like they're YouTube stalkers.
Okay. But no weapons seen?
I didn't see any weapons. I just saw like six guys in my driveway, and one of them is knocking on my door.
And the one that's knocking on your door, is he the main one that you said has been stalking you?
Yes, he's a stalker. He's yelling things at me through the door right now.
Okay, and what do we know his name at all?
It's Chris Hansen.
Before we begin, a small disclaimer. While other cases featured in this podcast have been dealt with alongside an air of a matter of fact, this one's going to be slightly different for various reasons. Most notably, the daunting volume of content surrounding one Gregory James Onision Jackson. What should also be considered is how Onision perceives himself, both behind the camera in leaked transcripts, which we will be covering, and in front of it as his online persona. One thing that will become more clear as we go on is how difficult it is to ascertain Onision's true persona, an image that is exclusively his and his alone. Please keep that in mind as we discuss Gregory Jackson and the history of the allegations brought against him in recent years. I also want to briefly state that the victims mentioned throughout have explicitly stated they do not wish to be contacted or involved in any content involving Onision going forward. Please respect that when discussing the show, or if your curiosity gets the better of you. These people have lives and boundaries that we wish to respect, while also detailing what happened to them by today's subject of the dark side of YouTube. And with that out of the way, let's begin. Chapter 1, Early Life and YouTube Beginnings. In November of 1985, Gregory James Jackson was born in Auburn, Washington. During his youth, he was raised by his mother, who cared solely for him and his older sisters, with their father, Randy Daniel, almost completely removed from the picture when Gregory was 2 years old. And a quote pulled from Gregory's Facts About Onision video, quote, "My mother filed for divorce once it was made clear that my father was a child predator," referencing a sexual crime towards a minor that Randy had committed, something which Gregory's older sisters have stated is untrue in recent years. This wouldn't be the last time he would be involved in Gregory's life, however, as he still saw his father and shared custody during summer holidays, since Gregory's biological parents lived across the country from each other. It's here where Greg would fire spurious claims at both his father, Randy, and his stepmother, Deborah. In Chapter 11 of an impromptu biography written on Onision.com, Gregory cites his father's love during estranged custody as superficial, with the stepmother given a somewhat token context of being evil when it came to her role in his life. To quote the chapter, "I am the constant reminder that her husband was in a meaningful relationship before she was ever relevant, but she fakes her kindness because she wants my dad to give her babies as well." At the age of 17, Gregory went to live with Randy and Deborah, with Greg at this point going through the typical edgy notions of most non-conforming teen adults. In an interview with Newsweek, Randy described Greg as a typical teenager. The tantrums and standoff parcel alongside outlandish threats of arson, threatening to burn the house down while he was left alone, forcing Deborah and Randy to ask neighbors for assistance in monitoring a typically disrespectful youth. All of this would come to a head during one particular instance, for which Gregory and Randy have differing accounts of. That being a fight that took place in the back of a car during a trip to Nashville. Also in Chapter 11 of the aforementioned biography, Gregory states it was over an unnamed woman, pushing Randy over the edge and choking Gregory in response. And in his published biography, quote, "This is why I hate you." He simply pins it as blunt as possible, claiming he insulted Deborah, which is what resulted in the fight. Randy's accounting of the event is much more different, albeit much more telling and accurate of any kid who acted as truant as Gregory did when growing up. While driving to Nashville, Randy noticed that his son was listening to music loud enough to be noticeable by everyone in the car, despite wearing headphones. After politely asking him to turn down his music, Gregory refused and ignored his father's request, with Randy responding by pulling over to the side of the road. I stopped, turned around, and said, "Greg, turn your music down. It's way too loud." And that's when he went off. He just started screaming and was just gonna bolt. He was gonna leave. What followed was a temper tantrum of the highest caliber. Randy held him down by his shoulders to stop his son from exiting the car, while Deborah proceeded to untie his shoes to impede the potential success of leaving the vehicle. Gregory's only response was to continue thrashing in the back seat, his feet slamming against Randy's seat, and his face, resulting in the father's glasses being broken, as well as his nose being bloodied from several kicks. This wouldn't be an unnoticed aggression either. In fact, this would be the cause of Gregory's stint in juvenile detention, after his tantrum was caught by passersby, who called the police in response. It would be a short stint, but it was something Randy and Deborah tried to provide leniency for, hiring an attorney to achieve a settlement that would result in probation, as opposed to minor jail time. It was here that Gregory would, at the very least, seem reformed. Randy states that once Greg was behind bars, his attitude changed. Whether it was true rehabilitation or a response to being under constant surveillance, Gregory's next steps in his life would unequivocally show a progression to manhood. After his tenure in juvenile detention, Gregory went back to live with his mother, with Randy and Deborah, not being able to see, hide, nor hear of him until 2005, when he called out of the blue with an announcement. He was married to a woman named Sky Tantanga, and he was making the final steps into joining the United States Air Force, originally as an SERE, Specialist Instructor, the SERE standing for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. Simply put, it's a teaching role within the USAF that covers many branches in that division, whether it's pilots, airmen, or navigators. It would also be during his tenure in the military that would shape him for the future, starting in 2006, when the Onision channel was first created on YouTube. Chapter 2, The Birth of Onision. While the Onision account on YouTube was created in January of 2006, Gregory didn't use the channel for its intended purpose until October of 2007, a potential conflict with his military schedule preventing him from uploading even sooner. Making his debut with him speaking through a Darth Vader voice-changing helmet, you know, the kind of content you'd expect from YouTube at that time, alongside Keyboard Cat wannabes' mimetically infamous songs like Erasure's Always and Ozone's Dragostea Dente, and a bit crushed UK grime songs. Well, regardless, it would be sporadic uploads for some time. Another sign of Gregory's conflicting schedules, but also the difficulty he had with his training as an SERE specialist. Before we get to the context of Gregory's dismissal from the USAF, however, it should be noted that despite his discharge, Greg cites his time in the military as a turning point for his maturity and growth as a man. His veteran status underlying many of his authoritative gestures in both arguments and statements, even though the patriotism one would exude from such a role is dissolved, both by Gregory himself and by his actions during his military tour. In any case, while his role in the military cannot be disputed, his eventual discharge and reasoning for doing so can be disputed, even in the face of redacted documentation. At some point during the minimum of 45 weeks of training as an SERE specialist, Gregory was tasked with killing a rabbit as part of the survivalism section of his military role. Due to his devoted veganism at the time, it was something Gregory objected to, which is surprising, to say the least. For those who don't know, an SERE specialist is a role that covers almost all of the military's more daunting scenarios. Whether you're behind enemy lines, or captured and resisting interrogation, these types of scenarios would involve casting aside certain proclivities you hold in the name of civilization, or otherwise, to be a dedicated trooper. Was he really so unaware of the nature of his training course that it would shape his role in the military to come? All signs point to no. While Gregory would shift the blame towards the supposed incompetence of his overseers and instructors, it's just as likely the authority was another crux in the future shifting of responsibilities from military duties to YouTube. In early 2008, Gregory would file for the status of conscientious objector, omitting a frontline position for something along the lines of civilian duties. This would also free up his schedule to dedicate more time to his YouTube, fully spawning the Onision persona that we've all come to know and tolerate. What's interesting to note is that even for 2008, the personality and transparency, transparency under some back-breakingly heavy quotations in this context, was unseen for a YouTube channel at that point. And that's including the vlog channels that would perpetuate the YouTube landscape in its infancy. While spritzing 2008's equivalent of comedy in many of his videos, Gregory would also write his heart into many of his other videos, like his early upbringings, the aforementioned family turmoil, through his lens, that is, and most notably, his mental health. On November 14th of 2007, Onision would state that this was the day he decided to dedicate his time to YouTube fully, referencing an incident with a loaded M9 pressed against his head. A rather bleak image to consider, but it would shape him in more ways than one. His disillusion with patriotism and authority, with the road that took him here and where it would lead. Did it scare him? Probably. Did it happen? Whether it did or not, it would be the baseline for the expanding role his military tour had in his videos. At some point in 2008, Gregory would start a military tour in South Korea, fulfilling his new role from an SERE specialist to a security forces member for the USAF, or as Gregory would put it rather bluntly, a cop. This rather straightforward descriptive of his new position would be evident with his growing disdain for the military and the type of, quote, hilarious hijinks that would ensue with many of his early YouTube works, most notably his most infamous incident, Naked in My Boss's Office. Okay, now that that small amount of sick has been removed from your throat for imagining such a sight, in November of 2008, Gregory uploaded a now-deleted video detailing how he stripped naked in front of his commanding officer to prove a point of humanity and his use as a human weapon. A rather poignant point to make in regards to the war machine, I'm sure, but in regards to his conscientious objector position, this would prove a moot point, considering his new pacifistic role in the United States Air Force. Nevertheless, the context for this incident is much more telling, considering the earlier tantrums he had. When Gregory revealed that he'd received a letter of reprimand for refusal to clean an area demanded of him by a senior airman, and in response, stripped completely naked in the office of his chief master sergeant, and that's when he made his vaguely Metal Gear-esque point about humanity and the military. After being fined and stripped of his military stripes, it wouldn't be long before Gregory was given a general discharge from the USAF, and the general is real important here. For years, Gregory has stated that he is given an honorable discharge from the military, which would mean that he finished his tour before refusing to do a second one. Instead, what happened was that Gregory quit early and was given a general discharge under honorable conditions. It's been a point of contention for years now that he lied about his exit from the military, but the truth is much more telling of a reactionary like Gregory. It's not that he lied about his discharge. It's that he didn't read his own discharge papers properly. In any case, this would be the final obstacle preventing him from jumping into YouTube full-time and returning to his then-wife, Sky, who began to appear almost instantly in his new videos, starting in September of 2009, which would prove to be the most important month of his YouTube career thus far. With the release of Banana Song, I'm a Banana, the perfect viral hit that would bring his YouTube channel to the eyes of the masses, amassing over 90 million views at the time of reading. This is where the YouTube career would go into overdrive, providing many touchstone moments in such a short amount of time at a period where it seems so rare for creators on YouTube to get the same amount of attention. Onision would be featured on Comedy Central's Tosh.0, attaining the type of celebrity status that would have forum posters comment on his personal life, accruing rumors about the potential divorce he'd had with Sky, something which the pair would find humor in with the videos, playing characters who joke about the rumor themselves. What's important to remember about YouTube and its teething sessions is that a figure like Onision, so ready and full of venomous stances, is that it was unprecedented. Even when you consider that the platform has moved on to be today, it worked perfectly, a revolving slideshow of immoral arguments, which would now span a career of controversy that spans a decade and beyond, which sprouts further beyond the path he's already walked. Allow me to explain. While Onision's earlier work would flirt with the idea of injecting activism into a new route of virality, it wouldn't be long before he'd become much more engaged with the idea of simply being a louder, more caustic individual. Barbed judgment would sprout from an otherwise hopeful individual who at one point seemed to potentially actuate activism for stigmas affecting concepts like mental health, would soon find himself dismissing those same concepts with the type of boomerish dismissal that renders any argument as immature or mislaid. It was all too common for Onision to mock emo culture for its supposed whininess and pathetic accusations with self-harm, quote-unquote, or otherwise seem to be tall words, when you take into account one of the main reasons Onision decided to make YouTube his platform. To inspire. To motivate. To help others who struggle within the same position, military or otherwise. What could have been a position to be an arbiter turned out to be the beginnings of another YouTube sociopath, a road walked by many who find their audience in drama and a position of power. Chapter 3, The Accusations. As of 2022, we've had more than a handful of individuals in power being exposed for improper practices. Manipulation of their peers, loved ones, abuses of power, and ultimately unspeakable acts that would get us demonetized if we even said it by name. But you know what I'm referring to. Many powerful men and women we grew up idolizing and respecting have been dragged into the light and exposed for the monsters that they are. Sometimes by their victims, sometimes by the authorities. But it happens regardless. And I know, some will scream about the cancel culture mindset, but I hope one thing we can rally behind together is the eradication of abusers. Because that is exactly what the man known as Gregory James Daniel, aka James Jackson, was, is, and continues to be. And he's been doing it a lot longer than anyone on YouTube. One of the earliest instances of problematic issues, outside of the either absurdist or provocative content 2010's YouTube content creators were known for, Onision had one particular habit in his content that made any rational person cringe and want to scrub themselves after seeing it in action. Rating his fans, colleagues, and other YouTubers based on their bodies, and if he'd fuck them. Now, because Dear Gregory has attempted to erase a lot of his work from YouTube and the internet at large, it took a little bit of digging to find the stuff. But the internet is nothing if not meticulous and spiteful in its information cataloging. And it didn't take long to find, you know, the real good stuff. All of which will be linked below. Viewer discretion is absolutely advised. Starting soon after Onision's first big success with the banana video, and tasting niche celebrity fame thanks to being uplifted by Tosh.0 and Comedy Central, his ego continued to fill, and he adored the attention it got him. Being an outspoken, aggressive, and, at least to some groups of women, an attractive older man, it opened a lot of doors for Onision that let him bypass normal boundaries. Which is how we get to the rating system. During the height of his popularity, a website ran that allowed fans to discuss topics for Onision to interact with and, eventually, make videos about. Now, it's important to note that there are several threads of people over 18 willingly posting themselves in the hopes of getting validation, the same way some fans do even now with their favorite streamer. The difference? Onision embraced it, rather than setting healthy boundaries. During the course of the first video, quote, "Would Onision date you?" we see him commenting on several women's appearance, picking at specific things about them to mock to his then exceedingly large fan base. But it doesn't take long for issues to pop up in his tangents. namely that of age. He makes passing comments about the age of consent that fans would mention how they were, quote, just waiting for him after turning 18, then saying it's great for every woman to post her age to avoid a gotcha YouTube moment, catching him in the act with a minor. This was posted in 2017, less than 2 years before everything would really pick up. So, awkward. As the video progresses and he spends more time breaking down women's confidence in their appearance, the age issue keeps coming back up. More concerns over fans lying about their ages and catching him out before closing with the fact his website forum is adults only, but doesn't allow adult content. Because of the length of time he's been on the platform and the sheer volume of victims that came forward, we're instead going to focus on the key individuals whose stories are already out there that brought Onision's behaviors to the surface. This, of course, brings us to Sarah. Chapter 4, The Onision Family. What I'm about to discuss is, for a lack of a better word, utterly grotesque. And if you or someone you know has experienced sexual assault, please take some time before listening further, and please don't be afraid to pause this. We will also be jumping around a little bit timeline-wise. Again, we are delving into a relatively sensitive topic, and I want to make sure that you know, going into this, what the content includes. Please do not be afraid to pause if needed. Sarah was just 15 years old in 2015 when she met and befriended Onision, then 30 years old, and his spouse, then age 21, through Twitter. I should note at this stage that in that time since these incidents occurred, they transitioned, go by the name Kai, and uses he-him pronouns, exclusively which I will continue to use, but it is important to note that Kai was identifying and going by their assigned gender at that time. The couple actually fostered Sarah, and she would move in with them shortly after at an age of 16. This was openly discussed by Onision and Kai on their YouTube channel, and despite obvious red flags by the community, it did not dissuade their decision. However, many concerning tweets would raise alarm bells and act as a most disturbing sense of foreshadowing, because not only was Onision a repeated manipulator, groomer, and predator, but Kai was as well, the two most infamous, and can still be easily found thanks to Google, because, you know, as we know, the internet never forgets, were as follows. Quote, at SarahBear8500, I'm grooming you nicely. And, quote, in other news, I'm totes sending Regina nudes right now. The Regina in question was one of their mods and was also a minor. There were other screenshots of texts alluding to specific acts Kai wanted them to do, even photos Kai had sent. I don't want anybody to vomit, so I'm just going to leave that out there for you. It would be sometime later that Onision would upload another video clarifying Sarah had in fact now left, and it was the internet's fault for, quote, conflating and confusing their relationship. What had in actuality happened was the couple had systematically groomed Sarah, waited until she was 18, had sex with her, and then kicked her out. And this would be the final spark that would light the tinderbox of Onision and Kai's skeletons to come bursting out of their sordid closet. In 2019, this would come in the form of a Twitter thread exposing Kai and their discussions of a sexual nature with Sarah when the latter was just 15 years old, even going so far as to bring her into the bathroom when Kai was bathing. As the proverbial floodgates opened, so too did the archives. The internet had, by this point, been collecting and waiting for the right moment when all eyes were on them. So, they put it all into a single video covering texts, tweets, and even a Twitch stream where Onision himself openly mused on the prospect of being in a relationship with Sarah in the future as the couple was polyamorous and non-monogamous. Quote, I'm not talking about what happens in however much time. I don't know what the future holds, but we're not dating Sarah. This was on a live Twitch stream about his 15-year-old foster daughter. I mean, I just... And because of the kind of people both Onision and Kai are, they proceeded to, at first, downplay the accusations. Kai was going so far as to state that it wasn't weird that they were friends when Sarah was 14 and Kai was in their 20s, but that it was never anything more than platonic, despite the screenshots we've previously discussed. There were also thirst trap photos of Kai posted to Twitter with the words, "Courtesy of Sarah," in the caption, and a denial by Kai they'd even so much as cuddled. But then a video came out of the two of them snuggling in bed. So this entire segment did not go over well. Onision, however, went even further in his video. He attempted to gaslight and control the narrative by stating that Sarah never supplied proof. They'd made it clear a relationship with Sarah would never happen and was out of the question. Again, the internet never forgets. "She's 16, I'm 31, this is creepy." Yeah, you know what? You're right, Onision, it is fucking creepy. But this might be the icing on the cake from that very same stream, stating that he did not know what the future holds in an answer to a question from a fan, asking this: "Has Sarah ever seen you or your spouse naked?" Onision takes a long pause, smiles, and says, "As an adult, definitely." And as the video progresses in vintage Onision fashion, he blames the internet's fixation on creepy things and seeing disturbing partnerships that aren't there as the problem. Not him. The most brazen act of all was openly calling Sarah a rapist, and that she, an underage girl, was the one forcing herself on two adults. There are no words. I could go on about the contradictions here, but there's more, and honestly, it only escalates from here. Chapter 5, The Cult of Onision, Shiloh and Adrian. I don't want to get into too much of the nitty-gritty, but for the purposes of explaining just how bad things got with Onision, I need to talk about the controlling aspects of Onision's relationships. See, it wasn't good enough that you were dating little Gregory. No, like any abuser who wishes to control, he hides behind a series of kinks and the BDSM lifestyle, one which he very openly discussed with his underage fan base, and utilized it to subjugate and break his partners. Shiloh, his partner before Kai, was a 17-year-old fan when they met, communicated, and eventually dated. When that happened, Onision was 26. Shiloh at the time was a teenage musician with a promising career that Onision ultimately derailed during the time they dated and for quite some time after, forcing her to move from her hometown of Toronto to live with him, making her cut off contact with her mother, moving with him to Washington as he systematically cut her contacts both professionally and personally until there was nothing left but him. Eventually, all of Shiloh's life was consumed by one entity: Onision. If she wasn't starring in his videos and producing them full-time, she was catering to his every whim, giving in to his sexual demands up to 8 times a day, and, since it was her first relationship, considered it normal for adults. She confessed that he told her she was clinically obese and would pressure her to lose weight so he could, quote, pick her up to fuck her. It's here I need to pause and talk about the cult of Onision for a minute. Yeah, I really wish I was using hyperbole, but I'm not. What little Gregory did with his legion of young female fans was nothing short of cult-like in its behavior. In now-deleted tweets, that you can still find with a quick Google search, Onision would repeatedly tweet out about how, quote, "you belong to him. Your body was his to do with as he saw fit." He would go into excruciating and graphic detail about the ways in which he wanted to control you and indulge himself. This, again, was public, for all to see, despite his constant insistencies that his forums were only over 18. And that was the kind of place for that kind of behavior. As a pure narcissist, Onision wanted to own the people who lavished him with attention. He did this by demoralizing them through his rating videos, through rants about body image and how he could help them improve with his feedback if fans sent in photos. Yeah, some of these fans did in fact openly send him lewd photos, but the culture Onision created was what allowed for this to happen so often. In 2022, at the time of writing, we fully understand our position as content creators and the nature of a parasocial relationship. We know the power imbalance, and even though a lot of the worst apples have been taken out, many still remain. Onision understood that power imbalance, but he didn't just ignore it. He thrived on it. That power dynamic fueled his desires and would play into his personal relationships in the worst of ways. It was this level of stress and scrutiny that would lead to the video, Shiloh Forgot Me, posted by Onision in 2011. In it, he would ask her a series of questions and gauge her responses, eventually determining her memory loss was up to 3 years, leading to the provocative and profoundly self-absorbed title. Sometime in the summer of 2011, Shiloh would suffer the first of what would be many seizures throughout her life. Upon coming to, she'd learn that Onision didn't call the hospital, but instead filmed the incident in full to post on his YouTube channel, mining the emotional and physical well-being of his loved ones for fucking views. It was yet another line Onision crossed in his disregard for the people he loved. He would defend himself when challenged on this, stating that Shiloh had specifically requested no medical attention, which would lead to some fans accusing both of staging the entire thing for content. He would also film videos of Shiloh in the shower, forcing her to shave her head and joking that he was, quote, abusing her. This, coupled with the constant increasing abuse both from him and his fans, would drive Shiloh to her breaking point. Eventually, there'd be a brief lull in the relationship where the two separated, and Onision would post a video entitled, I Found Her, where he started dating Adrienne Jorgensen, a woman at least 7 years his junior. If you'll recall, Onision was 26 at this time. It really speaks volumes to the sort of person Onision is when someone he only briefly dated was able to get such a distinct impression of his personality. This is what she wrote in her journal following their fling, and it paints a real disturbing picture of the ever-growing psychotic tendencies he was showing. Quote, it felt like the more I rejected his attempts at controlling the situation, the more extravagant his next attempt would be. It was like the ultimate game of Pong, back and forth, until one of us would slip up, and then it's game over. I want you to remember, this is still night three of us talking. Not 3 years, not 3 months, not 3 weeks, 3 days. Please notice how he's already throwing around the L word, as if he's using it to control me and invoke fear, rather than to express any genuine feelings for me. She also adds, he told me that Shiloh is a psychotic, pathological liar, that almost every word that comes out of her mouth is fabricated or designed to hurt someone. I think it goes without saying that he told me he didn't believe she was pregnant and that she lied entirely about losing her memory, and that she admitted it to him later. Also in her letter, Jorgensen revealed that she had email correspondence with Hogensen's mother, in which she wrote to Jorgensen. He, Greg, tried mending things with his wife, Skye Tentanga, when he booted Shiloh, Hogensen, out. And now he's turned to her, Hogensen, when you guys didn't work out. He, Greg, just found the weakest link. It scares me because I know how calloused he is from the last time. I was there to rescue her at that time, but now she's too far away and knows absolutely nobody there. He's evil personified. It'll only be a matter of time before he kicks her out onto the street again. She just doesn't seem to have any self-worth anymore. This brings us to one of the darkest parts of this segment in Onision's already blackened life. He would reunite with Shiloh in November of 2011, entitled Our Child, announcing that 18-year-old Shiloh was carrying his firstborn. A month later, Onision would upload a video titled Shiloh Has Sepsis, which discussed the unfortunate and heart-wrenching news that they had lost their baby due to miscarriage. Then, in a moment of pure, unfettered evil, he would upload a clarification video called I'm Sorry, and a final video titled Goodbye, Shiloh, where the almost emotionless Onision claims Shiloh lied about her sepsis diagnosis, then states that they'd ended their relationship, and in answer to the clearly upset fans asking why he'd blame his ex-partner for losing their baby, declares, why would he show the truth just for views when his imagination can make up something much more entertaining? After this, as if on a mission to be one of the most sadistic human beings on YouTube, Onision would respond to Jorgensen's allegations of rape by telling his legion of fans on YouTube that, quote, Jorgensen has had sex with over 20 people. She's a slut. She's incapable of getting raped. The backlash was immediate and fierce. People threatening to beat him to a pulp, or worse if they saw him at the upcoming VidCon of 2012. A year later, he would capitalize on this with a video titled, why people hate Onision. Because apparently abusive, sociopathic, violent, manipulative, grooming cunt isn't a clear enough indicator. Who fucking knew? He apologized to Jorgensen, who accepted the apology, stating all was forgiven and that they should hang out sometime. Oh, isn't that nice, friends? I'm just fucking with you. He lied. Again. Big shocker. Chapter 6, The Breakdown and the Aftermath. The backlash to Onision's accusations was immediate, severe, and still lasts to this day. Unlike some performers, it's not even remotely simmered down, and it's safe to say that Onision will never be allowed to work on any social media platform. YouTube permanently disabled and demonetized his platform. Patreon banned him. His Discord server was nuked from existence, and any viable income he could have made has been restricted to the max. He did not respond well to that. Discussing how Onision responded to the overwhelming negativity is complicated. Something I mentioned at the top of this video is to keep in mind the kind of person that Onision is. A psychopath. Onision shows you what he wants you to see. He puts on the face he thinks is either appropriate for the situation at hand, or the one that will gain him the best advantage. Many of you will either have come across Onision or know him solely for the breakdown videos from 2019 to 2020, where Greg would begin calm and collected, before rapidly breaking down, pulling off his clothes, screaming, crying, fake vomiting, and debasing himself while throwing a tirade at the audience. These were constant, and designed to do one thing: get attention. And they most certainly did. Every influencer under the sun began chronicling his videos, looking for meanings frame by frame, putting pieces together from the existing accusations and making natural assumptions. But of course, this very much played into his narcissistic traits. The video largely just feeding into the constant deluge of content as it cannibalized itself. There were, of course, people who were concerned for Onision's well-being, but they were largely ignored given the accusations levied against him. And in time, it would be proven that this was indeed just a bit by Onision in order to get activity on the channel and increase his revenue since subscribers were dropping. I think the most chilling part is the sheer lack of empathy and overall emotion Onision actually has towards the entire debacle. The real version of him, or the one closest to him we've seen in recent times, has been a monotone and calculated one as he runs down the accusations, the consequences, and going forward. A sharp change from the screaming, embarrassing mess he portrayed prior. At this stage, it would seem there's no further for things to go. But there'd still be another level for things to escalate to. Chapter 7, Take a Seat. I want to bring your attention back to the 911 call at the start of our video. It was January 11th, 2020, when Chris Hansen walked up to Onision's door, knocking calmly before introducing himself and asking to be let in for his show, Have a Seat with Chris Hansen. As we now know, he was unsuccessful, and Onision would call the police out of fear. Chris testified he was simply trying to get Gregory Jackson and husband Kai's side of the story, given the accusations against the pair. Hansen had been collating information from the victims stated above for 2 months prior to the meeting, including one notable situation where the brother of a 13-year-old girl had previously begged Onision to remove provocative photos of her from his video back in 2017. He'd refused, and it astoundingly stayed up until Chris Hansen and the FBI got involved and had it successfully removed. The internet was captivated by January 13th when the news cycle picked it up, salivating at the notion of Onision potentially getting his comeuppance on national television, maybe even holding out hope for a criminal investigation that would put this predator behind bars. They would ultimately be let down. Onision would never meet with Hansen, instead demanding $350,000 for an interview as he, quote, only profits from making others look horrible, but was generous in charging $10,000 to everyone else because they, quote, earned less and are far less biased. Quote,
I don't want to participate in this circus without compensation, he stated. Quote, I should be paid to endure the stupidity of the current state of outrage and online culture. Ah, yes. Hiding behind the veneer of outrage cancel culture when someone says or does something problematic and doesn't want to face consequences for it. Isn't the world wonderful, friends? The situation would continue to evolve, and eventually Chris Hansen would release a documentary on Discovery Plus about Onision. Though there have been a significant amount of misgivings with the way the production and information was handled, and we can't in good conscience recommend it. There's not enough time in the show to explain the issues, but a quick look into it should give you the info you need to make an informed decision. Since then, the news cycle would continue to occasionally report on Onision, rehashing the older issues to keep him relevant for another few days. But with the looming pandemic and a constant focus on the here and now, the world would eventually move on. And Onision would lose the two things he craved and desired for his entire life. Attention and control. Chapter 8, Epilogue. I wish that, as we got to the end of this, I could sit here and tell you little Gregory Jackson would be behind bars and the victims had justice. But I can't lie to you. However, I think it's worth taking solace in the fact that he will never get access to a large audience of young, impressionable women again. No platform to peddle his manipulation and cult-like tactics behind a thin veneer of BDSM culture that was accessible to children. No major means of income by sitting in front of a camera, aging horribly, and still trying to pass as a hunky emo boy in his early 20s, rather than a borderline middle-aged man telling young people whether or not they're worthy of his attention. No. Eventually, Onision will fade from the collective consciousness, work progressively more mundane, and what he'd perceive as embarrassing jobs, forever known for one thing and one thing only. The vile actions he committed against vulnerable young girls. Because nobody's going to pay him $10,000 worth of an asking fee for an interview. I will tell you that much. But rather than letting Greg Jackson's life be the final footnote in this episode, I want to make a mention of the victims that he desperately tried to control and destroy. Shiloh is happy, moving on from her past, and is a successful musician full of beauty and vibrance. Sarah can lead a full, happy life as an adult, far away from Kai and Greg's clutches. Adrian and Skye are totally out of the limelight, able to heal from the damage that Greg inflicted upon them. I can only hope the same for the rest of his victims, and for his children, that they're all able to thrive in the sunlight, far away from his and his husband's looming shadows. Until next time, Darksiders. And don't forget, as always, don't do anything I wouldn't do.